Texas Health and Human Services website, Ector County confirmed cases, 6,547. Pot probable cases, 5,675. Fatalities, 269. Estimated active cases, 756. Estimated recovered, 11,197. These numbers seem to be the same as yesterday. From the Midland Reporter Telegram, we look at a news article that reports three women in their 60s were among the five Midland County residents that the city reported have died because of COVID-19 related issues. The city of Midland reported Tuesday that of the five deaths, four happened Sunday and Monday. The city reported that three were women in their 60s, another was a woman in her 50s, and the last was a man in his 70s. All five were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, and all five had underlying health conditions. One death took place January 5th, according to the press release. The number of deaths announced this month has increased to 22. The number of Midland County residents that have died during the pandemic rose to 207, according to the city. Here are some other numbers. As of Monday morning, there were 50 active patients in the critical care unit and on the COVID floor. Just last week, Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said it had been a while since the number of active patients went below 60. The 473 unconfirmed COVID cases reported last week by the Midland Health Department were the fewest going back to at least the last week of October. The positivity report of tests taken at Midland Health Centers finished at 21.6%. Through Monday, the positivity rate was at 17.9%. The last time Midland Health reported a full week with a positivity rate below 20% was the week of October 17th, where it stood at 17.4% at that time. The percentage of COVID patients inside hospitals in the Midland-Odessa region was 11.45%, according to the Department of Health Services. That was the third lowest percentage of all the regions in the state. Only the Wichita Falls area at 10.26% and the San Angelo region 10.82% were lower. Cases for this week, the latest number, 126, indicates numbers from Sunday and Monday. City of Midland cases this week, Sunday 25 unconfirmed, Monday 101 unconfirmed. The total during the pandemic is at 14,638. And now from the Texas Tribune, we'll bring you our Texas numbers. Health officials issue dire warning as Texas sees its worst COVID-19 outbreak. This is the same headline that they've had on their page for the last few days. However, we see some good trends in two of the three metrics that we report. Average new cases decreased in Texas by 1,568 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 19th, 8,312 new confirmed cases and 1,069 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 290 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 19th, 13,928 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. We mentioned this yesterday, the death metric tends to lag behind the other two metrics, and that is the case today as average new deaths, it is still reporting an increase by 25 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 19th, 310 new deaths were reported. Now we're going to go straight into some of our news articles as it relates to the new administration. Our first is looking back, and this is from Fox News. Pence leaves Biden report on COVID-19 task force. A handwritten note was also left for the vice president-elect Kamala Harris by Alexandra Hine, Fox News. Vice President Mike Pence left a report for President-elect Joe Biden on the past administration's White House coronavirus task force. It was not immediately clear what the report contained, but Pence had been the head of the task force throughout the administration's response to the ongoing pandemic. Pence led a team that included Dr. Deborah Birx, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, CDC Director Robert Redfield, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Kenneth Cuccinelli, Surgeon General Jerome Adams, and Administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Seema Verma. Azar has already resigned, and Redfield's tenure will end as Biden is sworn in. Adams penned his resignation note earlier Wednesday. Burks previously stated plans to retire following backlash from Thanksgiving travel to a family house in Delaware. Biden has already announced members of his own task force team, which includes former Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. A White House official also told Fox Business that a handwritten note was left for Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. And now this from CNN. Biden's COVID team is nervous about what the Trump team hasn't told them, by Sarah Murray, MJ Lee, and Kristen Holmes. With the hours dwindling until Joe Biden is sworn in, officially taking the helm of the U.S. government during its worst health crisis in 100 years, a sense of nervousness has set in among those advising the incoming president on the pandemic. The overarching nagging concern, they don't know what they don't know, said a source close to the Biden COVID-19 team. Biden is set to inherit a nation grieving hundreds of thousands of Americans who have perished from the virus, a healthcare system buckling under the strain of the pandemic, new variants of the disease popping up around the world, and a public that is both stressed about the prospect of when they can get vaccinated, as well as dubious about whether to trust the vaccine when it's their turn in line. Multiple officials familiar with the transition said the lack of full cooperation and transparency from the outgoing Trump administration has contributed to Biden's COVID team feeling frustrated and concerned about having a full understanding of the scope of the problems they will confront on day one. But the president-elect's team feels ready for the fight. We're not going to hide from the fact that this is going to be a tremendous effort that is going to require the hard work of millions of Americans, said Representative Bill Foster, an Illinois Democrat on the House Coronavirus Subcommittee, who has participated in briefings with Biden's transition team and was describing their posture coming into office. It's not going to be some magical solution. The president-elect understands just how much the success of his presidency will depend on his ability to get the virus under control, the source close to Biden's COVID operation said. The president-elect is anxious and focused on the pandemic right now, which looms large over Wednesday's inauguration. Chief among the Biden team's concerns right now is vaccine supply and turning around the lackluster distribution effort, though new strains of the virus are another persistent worry about the incoming team. One source familiar with the Biden effort acknowledged a major gap the incoming team will have to confront is there is currently no effective and trustworthy line of communication between states and the federal government. Ramping up federal involvement in coronavirus testing and vaccine distribution starts with building up communications with each state to better understand their infrastructure and supply challenges, something that's expected to be a focus in the early days of Biden's presidency. States are clamoring for the federal government to release larger batches of vaccine, but it's not clear if there will be enough vaccine available to drastically speed up the pace at which they can be distributed and administered. While there is optimism that additional vaccines will soon be approved for use in the United States, including the potential of a single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine, there are questions about whether it can be produced fast enough to significantly address any potential supply problems. Foster, the Illinois congressman, said getting information from the Trump administration on delivery schedules and production progress for vaccines has been like pulling teeth. And I understand the frustration of the Biden team if they were seeing the same sort of resistance we saw on not what was contracted and promised, but what the actual milestones in the vaccine production are along the way, he added. Outgoing health officials in the Trump administration, meanwhile, insist they have been cooperative with the Biden team and have had hundreds of meetings with the Biden's transition team. Still, the Biden team likely won't get a full scope of the vaccine production landscape until he takes office Wednesday. The president-elect's team has expressed concerns about trying to get a grasp on exactly how the vaccine distribution is playing out and what's slowing it down across all 50 states. Even though Biden's team is fully aware they can't federalize the vaccine distribution process with the snap of a finger, the president-elect has vowed that the federal government will play a much more aggressive role in streamlining the vaccine distribution and COVID containment efforts. But even when it comes to some signature promises, like deploying the National Guard to run vaccination sites, it will most likely fall to each state to determine what works best for them. New variants of the coronavirus could prove to be another vexing problem for the incoming administration. The worst case scenario for Biden's team would be a variant that cannot be treated by currently approved vaccines. But America's inferior screening systems for monitoring new strains of the virus, combined with the fraught relationship with the outgoing Trump administration, adds emerging variants to the thorny list of problems a Biden administration won't be able to fully tackle until he takes office. Containing any new variant of the disease played into the Biden team's decision to immediately throw cold water on President Donald Trump's order lifting some travel restrictions on incoming travelers from much of Europe, the United Kingdom, Ireland, and Brazil. While the outgoing president ordered those restrictions be lifted on January 26th, nearly a week after Biden takes office, Biden's team said the president-elect would block the order once he's in office. With the pandemic worsening and more contagious variants emerging around the world, this is not the time to be lifting restrictions on international travel, incoming White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki tweeted Monday. In fact, we plan to strengthen public health measures around international travel in order to further mitigate the spread of COVID-19. This now from the Washington Post. Biden to sign day one executive order to shift coronavirus fighting strategy by Amy Goldstein and Isaac Stanley Becker, published January 20th. President-elect Joe Biden plans to take his first steps Wednesday to demonstrate a new strategy to fight the coronavirus, signing executive orders to require masks on federal property, renew emphasis on biodefense, and re-engage with other nations trying to conquer the global health crisis. These orders, which advisors say Biden will sign from the Oval Office in the afternoon after his swearing in, follow through on commitments he made either during his campaign or after he won the November election. In a briefing on the eve of the inauguration, senior aides portrayed these first-day actions as initial strategies within his grasp to reorient the federal effort to defeat the pandemic, which hit a grim milestone Tuesday of 400,000 deaths in the United States, exactly a year since the nation's first case was detected. Wednesday starts a new, different approach to managing the COVID-19 crisis, said Jeff Zients, who is becoming coordinator of the Biden White House's coronavirus response. This is clearly a national emergency, and we will treat it as such. Advisors did not provide new details on how Biden will change the federal strategy for vaccinating Americans against COVID-19, the disease caused by the virus. They focused instead on a set of actions Biden can take himself. Of the slow-moving vaccination campaign, Zients said merely that the new administration intends to place all hands on deck to ramp up getting shots and arms. Specifically, Biden plans to sign an executive order that he previewed in early December as part of a strategy to foster greater willingness among Americans to wear masks to help protect against the virus's spread. Attitudes toward masks became highly politicized during the Trump administration, with the president mocking those who wore them for several months, refusing to be seen one in public. Biden seeks to diffuse the partisan nature of what public health officials advocate is as a simple and effective means to inhibit the virus's transmission. The incoming president does not have the authority to order masks nationwide, but his executive order will compel people to wear masks and keep at safe distances in federal buildings and on federal property, aides said. It will also apply to federal workers and contractors. In addition, advisors said the Department of Health and Human Services and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will encourage states, cities, and U.S. territories to adopt their own masks and safe distance requirements. Another executive order Biden plans to sign Wednesday reverses the Trump administration's move to begin withdrawing from the World Health Organization, which President Trump accused of being manipulated by China. The incoming president is going to halt that process, which started in July, Zients said, contending the action restores America's role leading the world through the crisis. On Thursday, He said National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases Director Anthony S. Fauci, who will serve as Biden's chief medical officer for the coronavirus, is scheduled to speak at a meeting of the WHO's executive board. The incoming administration also signaled it would take a different approach to vaccine policy globally. During his Senate confirmation hearing Tuesday, Secretary of State nominee Antony Blinken said Biden would bring the United States into a global initiative called COVAX, intended to ensure that high-risk people in low-income countries have access to coronavirus vaccines. The initiative, backed by the WHO, is working to bring at least 2 billion vaccine doses to less developed countries by the end of the year. Much of the world's nations, aside from the U.S. and Russia, support the program. We believe strongly that we can do that, ensure that every American gets the vaccine, but also help to make sure that others around the world who want it have access to it, Blinken said. The Trump administration had said the United States would not join the effort, in part because of the president's refusal to participate in the WHO. Another executive order Biden is preparing to sign Wednesday will restore a unit within the White House's National Security Council that focused on global health security and biodefense until the Trump administration had disbanded it. That office, Zients said, will play a critical role in stopping the COVID-19 pandemic and prevent future biological catastrophes. Those actions are among 17 executive orders that Biden intends to sign in the hours after he assumes office, with others focused on addressing economic strains caused by the pandemic, the climate, and matters of race and equity. Advisers said the initial orders would be followed within days or weeks by reversals of other Trump-era policies, including getting rid of the so-called Mexico City policy, which has required nonprofits in other countries that receive federal family planning assistance to promise they will not perform or encourage abortions. The policy has been a partisan pendulum for decades, reappearing when Republicans have been in the White House and vanishing under Democratic presidents. And now from an opinion piece from the New York Times. Biden's stimulus plan will bring relief, but there's one flaw. The new administration's aid needs to last as long as the emergency, by the New York Times editorial board, published January 19th. Joe Biden will take the oath of office as the 46th president of the United States on Wednesday in the center of a city fortified against some of its own countrymen and in the midst of a pandemic that is killing several thousand Americans every day and that has pushed millions more into poverty. He faces a momentous and urgent set of challenges, leading the nation up from the pandemic, reviving the economy, repairing America's tarnished reputation on the global stage. Mr. Biden's first step, a fiscal plan that he introduced last week to address the pandemic and its economic consequences, shows that the incoming president and his advisors have taken some valuable lessons from recent history. The federal government's response to the 2008 financial crisis was too small and ended too soon, in part because policymakers worried too much about the long-term consequences of borrowing and not enough about the immediate needs of suffering Americans. Mr. Biden, by contrast, is proposing to deliver a whopping $1.9 trillion in borrowed money, much of it aimed at the areas of greatest need, including the public health response to the coronavirus, workers who have lost their jobs, and public schools that need help to reopen. The economy is faltering, and although vaccinations have begun, the nation is likely to remain in the grip of COVID-19 for some time. Federal aid is a necessary palliative. But there is one lesson that apparently still needs to be learned. Mr. Biden is proposing to repeat a mistake made by the last two administrations by setting an arbitrary end date for economic aid programs, rather than tying the benefits to the duration of need. Under the Biden plan, some aid programs would run through September. That might be more help than is needed. It might be just about the right amount, or it might not be enough. Consider the example of unemployment benefits. Last year, in the opening weeks of the pandemic, Congress approved a plan to send $600 a week to unemployed workers on top of state unemployment benefits. The money kept millions of Americans from poverty and hunger, but the program included an arbitrary expiration date at the end of July. The benefit was not extended, even though the need for it was essentially unchanged. In December, Congress approved a new $300 supplemental weekly benefit, this time with a March expiration date. Mr. Biden wants to increase the benefit to $400 and extend the aid to September. This is no way to fight a fire. Emergency aid should last as long as the emergency. Unemployment benefits are, by nature, tied to economic conditions. The number of people getting benefits rises as economic growth declines. Unfortunately, unemployment benefits are calibrated for good times. The government intentionally limits payments to encourage people to look for work. That doesn't make much sense during an economic downturn, let alone during a pandemic when many people are being asked to stay home. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, the incoming chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, proposed in December to let economic conditions determine the duration of the supplemental federal benefits. Under his plan, payments would have continued nationwide until the jobless rate fell below 5.5%, measured as a moving three-month average. The government then would have continued making the payments in states with high unemployment rates. Mr. Biden's economic team has said it's open to tying benefits to conditions. The exact details are less important than the concept, but Mr. Wyden's plan is a good starting point. Much of Mr. Biden's plan is aimed carefully at the pandemic and its economic effects. Getting vaccines into arms is the single most important step to revive the economy. Providing money to schools is necessary, both to get kids back into classrooms and to get parents back to work. But the Biden plan also includes a pair of big spending proposals that are not aimed specifically at those suffering economically because of the pandemic. The first, with a price tag of roughly $464 billion, would send $1,400 to most Americans, on top of the $600 federal payments approved in December. The idea is politically popular, and Democrats have tied their own hands by campaigning on the issue in the Senate runoff elections in Georgia. The broad reach of the program would help some people who do not qualify for targeted aid programs, like people who have not lost their jobs but are working fewer hours. Still, it's not the best use of money. The economic damage caused by the pandemic is intense but quite concentrated. Most workers are still getting paid. Some of the stimulus money could be better used to increase the proposed weekly supplemental unemployment benefits in Mr. Biden's plan from $400 a week back to $600 a week, as in the early months of the pandemic. The second program is a one-year expansion of the Child Tax Credit. Families could get a tax credit of up to $3,600 for children under age 6 and $3,000 for older children. Importantly, the credit would also be refundable, an odd Washington term of art that means families who don't pay enough in taxes to get the full benefit of the credit would get it as a cash payment. Analysts estimate this could cut the number of children living in poverty roughly in half. While this, too, is not aimed precisely at those in the greatest need because of the pandemic, it's a change in policy that ought to become permanent. The persistence of child poverty in America is a national disgrace, and reworking the tax credit is an effective remedy. There's no reason to wait for another piece of legislation to address what should have been done long ago. Congress, in sum, can and should improve on the details of the new president's plan. What ought not to be causing hesitation is fear-mongering about federal borrowing. The federal debt swelled under President Trump, even before the pandemic necessitated deficit spending to limit the economic damage. Those concerned about additional borrowing tend to emphasize that the debt is now about the same size as the nation's annual economic output. Mr. Biden's fiscal plan would further increase that measure to a level last seen in the 1940s, in the aftermath of the huge federal borrowing that funded World War II. But the burden of the debt is best measured by the cost of the government's annual interest payments to its lenders. The global decline in interest rates in recent decades has allowed the United States to borrow money at a very low cost. Despite the increase in the size of the federal debt, the amount of the government's annual interest payments has barely budged. Future economic growth could further reduce the burden of those interest payments. This is not a license for profligacy. Borrowing has a real cost, but there's simply no basis for policymakers to behave as if the government is approaching the limits of its resources. The bottom line is that the United States has ample capacity to respond to the pandemic. And that is your coronavirus update for this Inauguration Day, Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. Coming up next, we will be bringing you the program Eyes on Success. Following that at 2 o'clock, of course, there's much national news right now, and we'll have that from today's USA Today. At 3 o'clock, we will not forget the local news, and we'll bring that to you with some of these articles that our volunteers have been reading today. From today's front page of the Midland Reporter Telegram, we have a very interesting article that's at the top of the page. Coronavirus. Midland Health expecting 5,000 doses of vaccine a week. Business. Dallas Fed sees economy gaining ground this year. Prepared to succeed. MISD superintendent pick ready for challenge. Loan finalist says, the last time I checked, we don't teach kids at the central office. From the Odessa Americans front page, MCH needs volunteers for vaccination effort. Getting involved. NTO students give back through recycling. And pools to open this summer? Maybe so. Patton pitches pool opening to council during virtual meeting. Those articles and more on the way at 3 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, more national and business news from the Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for being with us today. We'll be back at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Be safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 41 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-40s. Then, tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-60s. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
The goal with SuperSense is to make sure that you have one tool that's the most efficient, most effective scanner possible. One of the main takeaways that you should get about SuperSense is that we're adding features. We're updating the app like every week to 2 weeks. We're always trying to improve this thing and make it useful for people.
And we'll be talking about this relatively new app in today's episode and its many features and how it can be used.
We'll speak with Shane Lowe, the liaison between the user base and the SuperSense company. Making use of advanced artificial intelligence algorithms, SuperSense is a powerful and versatile scanning app that can be used to explore your environment, find specific objects, scan text, and much more. But first for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Shane Lowe.
I like to travel a lot, and so even though SuperSense doesn't have any official navigation features, you can use the Object Explorer for all kinds of stuff. For example, when I'm walking around the airport, you know, I land flights at like 1:30 in the morning sometimes. There's not a lot of people around. So I use that Object Explorer to help me find people, to help me find desks, doors. And also, we're all mortal, and we all have to go to the bathroom. And this thing, the feedback that I get from people is that this thing is a lifesaver in public bathrooms. You don't have to feel around for a single thing anymore. You don't even have to look with your cane too much. You can let the camera do all the scanning for you.
Oh, I like it. That's a very useful feature.
I hope so, yeah. I thought it was useful.
I stay out of airport bathrooms for exactly that reason. They're huge and very confusing.
Absolutely. It's only recently with COVID that I've had to go into them just to wash my hands extra, but just to be safe.
Mm-hmm. So actually what we do, because if we travel, it's many hours and someone needs the bathroom eventually, is we'll use the family assist restrooms. So I've become quite familiar with which airports have a lot of them, like Denver, and which have like one for the entire airport, like LaGuardia, and try finding it. And, you know, if Pete could use the regular oversized men's room with a tool like this, it would make both of our lives a lot easier.
Absolutely. Yep. You can go through the entire airport cathedral bathroom now with no trouble.
And a little bit later in this episode, we'll show you how the Object Explorer works, not necessarily in a bathroom or an airport, but at least you'll get some sense of how to use it.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Shane and learning about SuperSense, the company.
My name is Shane Lowe. I've been working with SuperSense for about 12 months now. So I've been here since the beginning of January 2020, and my job is essentially to be the liaison between the user base, the people, you guys, and the company, the developers. My job is to make sure that we're making a product that is actually useful to solve real problems that real people have, and, you know, to make sure that the product is valuable and take the feedback and research from the people that need it. I'm blind myself all my life. I'm 20 years old. I'm one of those crazy blind people that, you know, I travel. My fiance is totally blind as well. We went to Europe last summer, just her and I. I'm a percussionist outside of this working stuff. Avid reader, go to a lot of concerts. Lots of fun there. And I'm in college for a business degree. That's the rundown. Oh, also, just to make things interesting, I have a 4-year-old son as well. Just you know, never get bored out here.
I understand that SuperSense has a relationship with some researchers at MIT. Where is the company located?
Chagri, one of our co-founders, works with a lot of researchers at MIT. That's really what spearheads our research and development. That makes sure that we are producing innovative products that are solving problems. And he met up with Emre, who is all about growth and entrepreneurship in helping underserved communities like the blindness community. And so they met up in Boston to start this thing.
Is the team all based in Boston, or you have people contributing remotely from all over the place?
I'm working remotely. I'm here in Louisville, Kentucky right now talking to you. So I always work remotely. We have several people, our marketing strategist, our social media guy, those people are in Turkey. A lot of our developers are in Turkey. Both of the co-founders, however, are in Boston. So really the company is based in Boston, but the majority of our team is actually around Turkey or, you know, elsewhere in the United States.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners.
Find out more about partnership opportunities by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is SuperSense, the app.
In just a minute, we'll get into a little bit more detail about how the SuperSense app works and what it does. But maybe you can give us a brief overview of it, and we'll talk about the history of the company after that.
The goal with SuperSense is to make sure that you have one tool that's the most efficient, most effective scanner possible. Our design is that any feature that we have in the app, the goal is to be the best, the most efficient for people to use.
And as a blind person, I assume that you personally have a lot of experience working with different types of scanners and other apps.
Oh, yeah. So I've been on this journey for a long time trying to find good scanning software.
You talked about the genesis of this being with some people at MIT.
Yeah.
How long ago was that? When did this project get started? What was the motivation behind it?
It really started from a conversation that Emery and Chagri were having back a couple of years ago. They were talking about the value of AI and computer vision and how helpful it could be for a lot of communities and the benefit that it could add, the independence that it could add, and how they could utilize their skill sets to bring this out to benefit as many people as possible. So they did a bunch of research and discovered that the blindness field was one where they felt that they could make the strongest impact. And so they started by using AI to understand a physical space, seeing if they could teach an algorithm essentially to scan around an environment and tell, you know, the user what was there, what was around them in their vicinity. And that was the original incarnation of SuperSense that came out on Android. It was just an object explorer, so you could use the phone camera and it would tell you, you know, desks, chairs, doors, all kinds of things. It can now do over 600 objects, actually. And then also an object finder. So you could say, if you wanted to find people or doors specifically, you know, whatever it is, you could select that and it would only find those things and beep at you so you could find those specific things. That's how they started with that.
And how long ago was that?
The Android edition of SuperSense came out last year in 2019.
Oh, you've come a long way since.
Yeah, we've evolved a lot, I'd say.
You've been adding a lot, too.
We have. Yeah, these guys are busy.
You mentioned that you launched the app for Android in early 2019. When did it launch for iOS?
In April of 2020, we had the iOS release.
So at this point, are the two of them staying kind of in sync? A capability for one also gets implemented in the other?
They're all in sync, and we have added developers to the team to make sure they stay that way. So everything is the same for both apps. You have all of the features.
So I've been playing around with the program, and it seems to me there are lots of different options. You described some of them, but it's almost like the Swiss Army knife of vision for the blind. Can you talk about some of the options and functions that the app performs?
Yeah, absolutely. The goal there is to be as universal as possible. You know, we're always adding stuff. One of the main takeaways that you should get about SuperSense is that we're adding features. We're updating the app like every week to 2 weeks. We're always trying to improve this thing and make it useful for people. So after we put out that Android version with the Explorer and the Finder, we asked people what they wanted. Like, what do you feel that you need? And the biggest response we got was, we want a scanner that's reliable. I want to take my phone out and I can read anything. That's what I want. I'm not happy with the scanners that we have. I want scanning software that's better. And so we turned our attention to that, to finding ways to make AI understand text and read it more efficiently. And so now with SuperSense, right now at the time of recording, we have a quick reader that's going to read anything in front of you immediately, a document reader with unique guidance system that's going to be the most intuitive that you'll find to help you get the best picture possible of anything lengthy, book pages, long, you know, signs with lots of text, magazines, it'll cover it. And you can share and export any of that stuff as needed. We can scan currency, we can scan barcodes, we can import PDFs that are image-based, we can import photos from your library, and all of that stuff is packed into a smart scanner, which means as soon as you open up the app, you can scan anything, and it'll figure out what it is automatically, including the Object Explorer. So if you scan a chair, it's not going to try to read text on your chair, it's going to tell you that it's a chair, and then if you scan a $10 bill, it's going to tell you what it is, it's a $10 bill, and then you can go immediately to scan a book page, and you don't have to hit a single thing. It does all that automatically.
And that's kind of a nice feature of the app, and it really distinguishes it from some of the other options that are available for iOS and Android devices. Most of these other applications, you have to put it in a particular mode or even use a particular application, but as soon as you take SuperSense out, it sort of smartly decides, is this person looking at a dollar bill or a document they want to scan, etc.?
Yeah, absolutely. We, as I say, you know, we want this thing to be the most efficient. We want this to be the next best thing to looking at whatever you're trying to scan. There should be no extra steps.
You talked about how SuperSense can recognize the object and then read it or not and describe it appropriately. Does it also offer advice to the user if the image is too skewed or blurred or the lighting is terrible or any of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So first with the lighting, in the settings menu, you can set the flash mode, but that's automatic by default. So SuperSense will automatically handle any lighting issues by add light as needed using your phone's flashlight. So if it's too dark, it can bring light. If it's very bright, then it won't use the flashlight. It'll just use the light in your environment to take the image. And then for aiming, the barcode reader will give you some guidance beeps, similar to how Seeing AI will, to help you get the barcode lined up. And also with documents, as I was talking about earlier, the intuitive guidance system, it'll talk to you. It'll give you instructions that you can understand. It'll say, move your phone a little bit away from the document. Move it slightly to the left. Turn to the 11 o'clock position. It gives easy to understand directions so that it gets the clearest picture possible.
I was actually happy that Nancy asked that question because earlier today, before the interview, I did a little demo that I put together where I scanned a document. And as you say, what's very nice about this app is it describes in nice plain English how to orient the camera. Most of these other apps will give you little beeps and louder and shorter or higher or lower pitched. And I never know where to point the camera. But when I scanned this document, as you'll hear in the demo, it told me take the camera a little bit further away, turn it this way, turn it that way. And it makes it very easy to get a good picture of the document.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm really happy that's working well for you.
What other improvements or new features might people expect to be seeing in future versions of the app?
One of the things that we're working on, we have a ton of R&D, research and development projects, and one of them is being able to put images together of documents based on a video clip. So if you just pan your phone over the document for a couple seconds, it will process all of those frames, all of those images that were captured in the video. So it's like 60 pictures per second into a really clear image of the document. So it has the potential to become even easier than this.
Oh, so by taking multiple images and somehow stitching them together and picking out the best parts of each, the AI can be really smart.
Yes.
And do something incredible.
Exactly.
That's really nice.
Exactly.
Now, a lot of this processing sounds like it's pretty heavy-duty stuff. Does this all happen on the phone, or is this information going to your servers? How does that all work?
When you have a document or a barcode, it sends those things to the server. The barcode, because it has to check against our database of content to make sure that, we know what it is, and to send that information back to your phone. And a document, because you're right, there's a lot of heavy processing going on, and if you want that to happen quickly, it's going to go up to the servers. The servers are going to process it, with massive processors, and it's going to come back to your phone parsed perfectly for you to read. There's no storage that happens. So nothing that you scan at all is stored anywhere on our servers. There's no data to breach, essentially.
So this is your way of addressing potential privacy concerns?
Absolutely. We don't store any of that kind of data.
Now, you talked about information going to your servers for documents and barcodes. How about for some of the object recognition that you do?
A lot of the object recognition is going to happen on your phone. That's one of the nice things about it. I know that it has to reference the cloud in some instances. Sometimes it gets confused. But again, there's no storage that happens. And usually that happens completely offline. Or the AI knows what it's seeing because we've taught, what the, it's like a pet. We've taught it what the object is. And it can tell you what it is, and it's happening instantaneously, just like QuickRead.
And I also made a demo of that that we'll insert later in the show. But I thought it was kind of neat and particularly useful for a blind person because you can be sitting in a room and just by scanning your phone around the room, it will tell you what's in the room, where there are doors, where there are windows, where there might be a chair if you're looking for someplace to sit down. And that can be very handy.
Absolutely.
I was really impressed. I happened to walk into the room while Pete was playing with it, and when I appeared in front of the camera on the phone, it correctly identified me as having a human face.
Yeah.
Good thing it got it as a human face, huh?
Yeah, I'm glad it got that right. We could be in trouble right now if it didn't.
So how big of a team does it take to do this? This sounds like a lot of work.
Absolutely. Right now, I want to say we've got about 15 people on the team. We have 7 or 8 people working on the product development side. You know, we have a lot of developers working because this is multi-platform. We're on Android and iOS, so every feature has to go through both of those platforms at roughly the same time. So we have a lot of people working on the programming side. We also have a growth team. You know, I work with some really incredible people. We have a blog on the website, so, you know, we do a lot of writing, a lot of producing content because we want to really integrate ourselves into the community. You know, I've been in this community all my life, but the company hasn't. And so we want to write things that are interesting to readers. We want to, you know, show that we're here for the long haul. We're not going anywhere, and we want to talk about what's interesting to our users.
In a lot of products that are being developed for the blind, it's very important to get user feedback to make sure people are actually addressing the questions and the problems that need to be addressed properly in the way that users can most effectively use them. And I know you're blind, and I'm wondering what other mechanisms the company uses to gather its input.
Absolutely. That's part of my job. It's a lot of fun. We reach out every week or every couple of weeks. Depending on what's going on, we reach out to all the new users. First, we reach out to every user by email as a personalized email to invite them to give their feedback. And then also a couple weeks later, we reach out to everyone and ask, you know, if they're interested in having a phone call. And I schedule phone calls with every single user that's interested in giving us feedback, not only about the app, but also just to get to know them, to talk about issues that they might be having or, you know, their daily life, just to get to know the people that are using our app so that we can, you know, extrapolate from that information. What are we going to make next that's going to be valuable to people? What's going to be important to people? What's going to solve the hot problems that people are having around the world?
Since you brought up the topic of the future, you've already told us about a number of functions that the app performs now, and you talked about all of the new features you've been adding in the recent past. What might people expect in the future? What kind of directions is SuperSense taking?
You know, I mentioned the imaging research project. That just got finished, actually. We just finished that. And so, you know, the next stage is to work that into the document reader, make that a feature. So that will be an improvement coming to the document reader in the near future. We recently finished an enhancement to document reader as well that will properly read columns and like charts. You know, there's no scanning app on the market right now that can handle magazines in multi-columns or charts or tables or bank statements, anything like that.
That's tough.
And so that's going to be one of the big features coming to Document Reader, even more closely to now. That's going to be pretty immediate. That's going to be coming in a month's time, I would say. Outside of those kinds of improvements, we're working on a color identifier that actually works. As a blind person, I've been experimenting with color identifiers for like 10, 12 years, and, you know, I've never really found one that's reliable. And so, you know, that's a big thing that we've been talking to people about. We've been researching about something that can read appliances really well or digital screens to help people use, you know, anything from their washer or dryer to a new stove to, you know, medical devices, EpiPens, anything like that, that you need to read a display on. You know, there's a huge range of options here that aren't covered.
Yeah, some of those sound very useful.
Yeah, I hope so.
A lot of the image recognition apps these days don't read appliances and LCD screens so well, do they?
It's true. Not in my experience, anyway. And so we want to design things that'll be useful. We're also working on some navigation technology. You know, we want to take advantage of LiDAR and all of these incredible leaps that are happening in mainstream technology right now to port those over and say, look, these things are also helpful for disabled people. We can do some incredible things with this. And so we're working on some really innovative stuff down the pipeline in terms of navigation and supersets.
We have a lot to look forward to then.
And as promised, here are some demonstrations that Pete put together. First, the explore mode of SuperSense.
Now I'll get into the explore mode where I can point my phone's camera around the room to see what objects are in the room and SuperSense will tell me. So again, I'll hit the start button and I'll point my phone at various points around the room.
Object explore mode on. Poster. Computer monitor. Computer keyboard. Shelf. Bookcase. Window. 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 Chair. Human face.
And that's me.
Human face.
And the next demonstration is SuperSense reading a document.
I'm going to scan a document with SuperSense, and I'll start with my phone considerably skewed from the document so that you can see how SuperSense guides you into the correct position to take a good picture of the document. I'll start by hitting the start button.
Document mode on. Rotate to 1 clock position. Move further away from the document. Processing.
And you can hear it. And you can hear it took the picture there.
Document. Beginning of the document for reading. Vision Quest D. Once stranded in the sighted wilderness, the blind are leading a new technological revolution, by Daniel Eisenberg. May look and it's clear that Peter Torpy, like any self-respecting computer geek, isn't particularly image conscious. With a rumpled blue cardigan and mop top of graying hair, the Xerox scientist spends much of his days inside a sterile office in Webster, NY, cranking out software code on his Unix workstation.
And that was a particularly challenging document. That page was black with writing that was part blue and part white, all different sizes, some characters overlapping others. So the fact that SuperSense was able to make sense of that was really pretty impressive. On the other hand, the journalist got a few things wrong. Pete's sweater was neither rumpled nor a cardigan.
But of course, that wasn't the fault of SuperSense, that was the fault of the reporter who was interviewing a scientist and had some preconceived notions of what a scientist was all about. That was when I was working at Xerox and there was an article they did about me as a blind image scientist working at Xerox.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about SuperSense and how to contact them.
If people want to find out more about SuperSense or the app, where would you direct them?
Absolutely. So you can go to supersense.app, supersense.app, if you want to take a look at our website. You can learn about SuperSense there. It's available on iOS and Android, so you can pull it from either of those stores. You can check our blog out on the website. It also has links to our social medias. You know, we're on Facebook and Twitter, SuperSense AI, so check that stuff out. You can request a call within the app if you need it.
And as usual, you can find all of that contact information, if you missed it in the audio, in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. As our listeners know, there are many apps for iOS and Android devices that can be useful to help people who are visually impaired. And now that we're in the 11th year of doing this show with over 500 episodes in our searchable archive, you can use the search feature on our website to search for some of those apps if you're interested in learning more about them or what apps might be around. You can put things like iOS into the search field or Android, or if there's a specific app that you'd like to know more about, chances are we've done a show about it, and you can put the name of the app in the search field, and you'll come up with a list of episodes matching that search, along with a summary of the show and links to the audio and show notes for that episode. And remember, the show notes can also be very useful because they contain lots of contact information, URLs, and just some additional information about extra resources that might be useful about the show.
That's it for show number 2103. Next week on Eyes on Success will be the first of a two-part series in which we speak with Eric Damery, Vice President of Software Product Management at Freedom Scientific, a Vispero company. And we will be talking with Eric about the evolution of access technology and his personal role in that evolution. He has been involved for over 35 years.
And that was really a fun conversation we had with Eric. So you'll certainly want to join us for those two episodes. Catch you next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Ector County Appraisal District has sent out property tax statements and payments are due by February 1st. Those who own real estate and the mortgage company does not pay the taxes. Those who owned a business January 1st, 2020, with assets that include inventory, furniture, fixtures, equipment, machinery, and/or vehicles, and those who own a working or royalty interest in mineral property should have already received their statement. If not postmarked by February 1st, 2021, the taxes will be considered delinquent and will accrue penalty and interest. Those who have not received a statement can call the Appraisal District at 432-332-6834 or visit the office at 1301 East 8th Street.
This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, the adventure comedy drama Letters to Juliet.
Verona, Italy. Where Romeo first met Juliet.
Sophia! Where are you, my sweet Sophia?
There is a place where the heartbroken leave notes, asking Juliet for her help. It was there I discovered a letter that changed my life forever. I didn't go to Lorenzo, Juliet. I promised I'd meet him to run away together. But instead, I left him waiting for me. Please, Juliet, tell me what I should do. Love, Claire. It was written in 1957. I have to write back.
May I ask which one of you wrote this letter to my grandmother?
I wrote that.
What were you thinking?
She deserved an answer. Excuse me, Claire? Hi, my name is Sophie.
Juliet.
So you've come to find your Lorenzo.
Yes.
Of course, a card or letter is just too simple.
May I come with you?
Yes, of course.
We're looking for a Lorenzo Bartolini.
I am Lorenzo Bartolini.
Sono io Lorenzo.
I am Lorenzo. No, io Lorenzo.
I am Lorenzo Bartolini.
Take him.
This is madness.
Charlie doesn't approve, which makes this all the more fun.
What you're doing for Claire, that's sweet.
It's just that I'm genuinely worried for her. So isn't your fiancé starting to get just a tad lonely?
My dad even notices that I'm gone.
Do you think he's still out there? Lorenzo.
Yeah. How many Sophies do you think there are on this planet? Don't wait 50 years before you find us.
The audio-described Letters to Juliet, starring Amanda Seyfried, Gael Garcia Bernal, and Vanessa Redgrave, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 41 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-40s. Then, tomorrow mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-60s. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hi, my name is Jean. I'm reading from USA Today, and today is January 20th, 2021. Inauguration Day. Biden becomes president, Harris makes history, and a battered nation